This multi-million dollar Ponzi scheme started in 2017. He is one of three hosts of an extremely popular urban podcast, The Breakfast Club. I've never seen that ever in my history of being a financial advisor of a multi-millionaire doing someone a favor of making them rich. That's not how it works.
There's a very good chance that DJ Envy already went and has already worked out his deal. Here's what people don't understand.
There's red flags everywhere throughout this entire story. Throughout the entire story, there's red flags, things that would make you say, there's no reason, no real reason why I should hand over my money to this person. But the road is paved with someone who's covering for him. And that would be, in my estimation, DJ Envy. This extremely popular DJ slash podcast host who is bringing credibility to a man who otherwise would have no credibility.
Right. So how did this
issue?
I'm sorry. So how did this start? One is Caesar went to prison or was convicted. I don't know if he went to prison, but did he go to prison?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. He went to prison. So this is a man who is a convicted criminal who claims that while he was in prison, he learned how to invest in real estate. Now, I'm not sure if he took the course that you created.
Yeah, maybe. I wonder where he was.
Right.
I may have contributed to this.
Right. But he claims that he was in jail and he learned how to invest in real estate by another prisoner. Now, this man, Cesar Humberto Pena, this man is a self-admitted drug dealer, but he claims he did not go to jail for drugs. He went to jail for fraud, all right? He went to jail for fraud. And he's claiming that, you know, while he was in jail, he learned how to invest in real estate. And according to the United States government, this multi-million dollar Ponzi scheme started in 2017. Then in 2018, he ends up partnering with Rashawn Casey, aka DJ Envy. For those people out there who have no idea who DJ Envy is, he is one of three hosts of an extremely popular urban radio show, but most people know it in its podcast form online, on YouTube, and the podcast of The Breakfast Club. Popular show. They bring on a bunch of different type of guests. They bring on, you know, movie stars. They bring on pop stars, and they even bring on politicians. Like, people who run for the president of the United States will pop up on this show. So they have some clout. It's not just a regular podcast. It's backed by a corporation, by iHeartMedia. And this man brings him on in 2018, okay? And this man talks about how he is a $50 million real estate mogul. $50 million real estate mogul.
And they talk about
how they want to give back to the community. Once again, to me, red flag. They're going to give back to the community. And DJ Envy, Cesar Pena, they're partnering up to host real estate investing seminars targeting the low-income community. Now, if you have no idea why that makes no sense, give me a second.
Right.
Real estate is not something that low-income people normally invest in, right? Real estate actually takes some capital to get into. So it doesn't quite make sense why they are hosting. They weren't free, but they were extremely low-cost real estate investing seminars all around the country, but mainly focused in low-income communities. Now, they claim it was for charitable reasons. They want to help people learn how to build generational wealth. Another red flag when people start talking about helping you build generational wealth, that's normally a lead-in to a scam. But other people are saying that these real estate investing seminars was a sales funnel to get qualified people in the door to lead them to this so-called Ponzi scheme. because there are many people that are saying, yes, there's everyday victims of this Ponzi scheme who were everyday mailmen, regular jobs people, but there are also many people claiming that drug dealers and people with dirty money saw this also as an opportunity to invest. And there's a lot of paperwork behind what they were doing. But this guy is promoting him to millions and millions of people and basically legitimizing him to the point where people are giving him multiples of millions of dollars to get a ridiculous return. We're talking about 30% in 5 months. 30% in 5 months for some people who are only investing $60,000. Some people who are investing $200,000. There's some people who invested $1 million with this man. And they explicitly say they invested because he was partnered with DJ Envy. DJ Envy is a part of a huge corporation, iHeartMusic. And they figured someone else did the due diligence. How was he able to get to this stage? And no one do due diligence. So when you get to the mailman or the you know, the guy working a regular 9-to-5, he believes DJ Envy did some due diligence. iHeartRadio did some due diligence. So they're just thinking, okay, this guy is legit. When all along the whole path, there's no way it can be done. There's no way that it can be done. There's, if you look at the paperwork, I think honestly, this was never legitimate. I don't think it was like, oh, we're really going to invest in stuff and give people returns, because we see case after case after case. He has multiple people investing in the same property, not knowing that there's other people on it. We're talking about a property that they bought for, let's say, $150,000, and they end up raising almost like $2 or $3 million to buy a property that they already own. Now, you could say, yes, you got to renovate the property, but a property that was bought for about $150,000 and eventually sold for what you would think is a pretty good markup, about $500,000. But when you have $5 million worth of investors' money in it, you're never going to turn a profit out of that. It's mathematically impossible to be able to turn a profit when you're overly collecting money for properties. And you're not telling other people what's going on. It's ridiculous.
Right. Yeah. So was he, prior to raising that money, mm-hmm. right, prior to getting connected with DJ Envy, mm-hmm. Is there any proof that Cesar Pena got out and was flipping properties at all?
I don't see a whole lot of history of that, but I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, right? I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. And let's say he did buy a few properties. Let's say he did do some fix and flips and stuff like that. But to sit up there, I think it was like October the 15th, 2018 was the very first appearance on The Breakfast Club, on this huge podcast / radio show. He sat up there and claimed that he was a $50 million real estate mogul. It's virtually, it's just ridiculous to even make that claim that he's a $50 million real estate mogul, but he needs micro investors of $60,000. Those two things don't work well together.
Right.
All right. It's impossible.
Well, so when did he get out of prison? Do you know that?
Oh, no. Off the top of my head, I'm not sure when he got out. I believe it was in the 2000s, though, right? I think he probably got in prison like the early 2000s and probably got out in the mid 2000s when he got out. So we're not talking about a lot of time. We're not talking about in the 90s. He's not that old. He's heavy and, you know, weight kind of makes you look older than what you are, but he's not that old. He didn't go to jail in the early 90s and he had like a 10, 15, 20 year run to be able to become this $50 million mogul. The U.S. government is claiming that this started in 2017. He didn't have really enough time to amass a $50 million empire and then all of a sudden has the time to travel around the country with a DJ and host real estate investing seminars for people who are low income. Like you,
right.
I don't think people understand the target audience that they have and that they're dealing with, the average income of these people are sub $50,000 a year. Like right. people who live paycheck to paycheck, but they're telling them that they can become rich, wealthy, generational wealth off of investing. And then here's the thing that I think is going to sink DJ Envy, because there's so much recordings and videos on this. I don't think these clowns understand that in the world that we live in now, everything is recorded. Like your promotions, all the social media, it doesn't go away because you delete it off your Instagram. Someone right. still has a recording of it. Someone retweeted it or something like that. There's a recording of this. Back in the day, when you do these seminars or you make these claims and it's face to face, yeah, maybe you can deny it. It's going to be extremely hard for them to deny this stuff. But there was a promotional video that is still online to this day. With DJ Envy, he is saying, listen, I know you guys are busy. It's hard for you to travel around the country and find these deals. Because remember, the funnel, based on what people are saying, the funnel is getting these people to the seminars, getting them hype about how much money you can make in real estate. But they're not real estate professionals. They don't have the time to vet the deals. They don't have the time to be the landlords. Here's the solution. The solution is you can partner with us. We'll find the deals. We'll be the landlords. All you have to do is invest, and then you get money by the mail. You sit back by your mailbox and you'll get money by the mail. And that right there is the telltale sign that DJ Envy does not understand the role that he's playing. He, in my estimation, he's a person that is using his level of influence to monetize that influence in a sense, in a form of payola, okay? I did a video on my YouTube channel called Podcast Payola. And in this video, I show evidence of how many of these fake gurus, they are paying the podcast hosts to get on their shows to be able to promote their seminars, their masterminds, and all that type of stuff. Well, DJ Envy is caught up in an issue with Podcast Payola in this way. He had another individual who he partnered with. This individual, he sells credit repair. And he basically told him this. He was already doing the seminars with him. He said, listen, I like what you're doing at the seminars, teaching people how to fix your credit. I want to bring you in and bring you on the show, The Breakfast Club. This is going to make your business pop. You get on The Breakfast Club, all of a sudden, you have exposure to millions and millions of people. So the guy's excited. Here's the catch. Allegedly, DJ Envy wants 25% of this man's business. 25% equity position in another man's business. And what is, you know, what is DJ Envy going to give him? Is he going to give him, like, you know, let's say the company's worth, you know, $100,000, what he gets to? No. His buy-in to the company is the exposure, is the come right. on the show. I bring you on the show. I post you on my Instagram. I want 25% of the business. And the guy goes for it. He goes for the deal. So he cannot claim, DJ Envy, he cannot claim that, hey, I'm just bringing these guys on. I was unaware of their business practices. I was unaware of what was going on. When he's literally the business partner of these guys and he's not disclosing it, that's another issue. He's not disclosing to the audience that he is having a financial incentive of the audience working with these people. He's making money. But when the shit hits the fan, when these guys get arrested, when everyone is finding out that these properties are way over leveraged, you got millions and millions of dollars so-called invested in these properties, he wants to throw up his hands and say, hey, I was just interviewing people. And that will never turn out good for him because there's too much of a paper trail showing that he was intimately involved in a lot of the stuff that was going on. He was in, these guys have the same office. Like, let's be clear. Like, people would come in, these potential investors would come in and they would be greeted by DJ Envy before they walk into the room and hand Cesar Pena allegedly thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars, one guy, millions of dollars. There's no way that he can divorce himself from this situation, even though, of course, to his audience, he's trying to claim, I didn't know what was going on. Initially, he said that Cesar Pena did nothing wrong. But let's be clear on the timeline here. A lot of stuff happened. When the allegations that his business partner was scamming people, he claimed it's a misunderstanding, miscommunication. Maybe we need to find out what's going on. Then when
I know lots, I met lots of guys in prison that were there on it was a misunderstanding.
It was a misunderstanding, right? Miscommunication,
right? Yeah,
it's a miscommunication. But ultimately, when more evidence started coming out, he was trying to, I guess, protect his reputation, right? He, out of his ego, he goes on live. So he gets interviewed by someone on Instagram Live. This individual, his name is Tony Robinson, goes by Tony the Closer Robinson. This guy is a real estate investor himself. He's the one who started getting this information from the alleged victims. The alleged victims are sending messages to a man named Tony Robinson. And Tony Robinson is trying to figure out what's going on. He basically repeats what the victims are telling him. He says, hey, DJ Envy and Cesar Pena, they have people claiming to be victims of an alleged Ponzi scheme. What's going on? Because Tony Robinson's following is big enough, he has over like 300,000, 400,000 followers on Instagram, this now alerts DJ Envy to have to respond. Because before, based on the victims, they're saying he ignored all of our outcries to do something. But when a big enough influencer in his same space, in the real estate space, said something, now it's time to respond. So they go on live together, which, listen, grifters, don't go on live. If you're not prepared, don't do it. Because you're going to tie yourself down to a narrative that you're going to have to try to walk back later.
Well, especially with someone that does know what they're talking about. You know what I'm saying? Like you can, with real estate, listen, in real estate, you can talk around somebody who doesn't have any clue.
Yeah.
You know, in finance, if I'm talking to a guy who has no idea, mm-hmm. you can talk around him very quickly and get him confused. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't, you only have to have a little bit of knowledge on a subject to make somebody else think that you're you're an absolute, you know, master at it.
Yeah.
But if the other guy, like, listen, I start talking about mortgages to another mortgage broker, you know, mm-hmm. or finance or something along those lines, and he knows it, then you also immediately know when you're talking to somebody in that industry. The moment you start talking to another financial advisor or, you know, you're a financial advisor, right?
Yeah, I'm a certified financial planner. Yes.
Right. Sorry, certified financial.
No. It's a type. Financial advisor is a broad term because sometimes, you know, people who sell insurance say they're financial advisors, stockbrokers say they're financial advisors. I'm a certified financial planner. That means I am literally certified to give people financial advice.
Okay. So at the moment you talk to another guy in your industry, you don't have to talk to him he doesn't have to say anything. You talk to him for 3 minutes and you immediately know he knows what he's talking about. Like I don't have to explain to him what, you know, DTI. I don't have to explain to him any of the terms I'm talking about. I don't have to break it down. You know immediately. And the other thing I was going to say, I wanted to mention, then I'll let you keep talking, is that DJ Envy, listen, I don't have the platform he's got. And I can tell you right now, I'll do a podcast on somebody and 5 or 6 people, if it gets 50,000 views, I got 5-10 people reaching out to me telling me, yo, bro, what that guy said was a lie. He this, he that. I grew up with him. That's bullshit. That's right. Not what happened. He didn't shoot that guy. So-and-so shot, you know, he's in prison right now. Immediately.
Yeah.
So the idea that you're on the Breakfast Club and you're promoting this guy and people are losing money hand over fist and they're, and you never, I didn't hear anybody complaining. The hell you didn't. You knew way before. People must have definitely been and the problem is the feds are going to go pull all those records.
Yep.
And if you say, oh, well, I didn't see those, really? Because we also got your phone. You did see them. You know what I'm saying?
And that's Matt, that's exactly what happens. He goes on this live stream with Tony, who is a real estate investor. He starts telling this narrative about, yes, you know, we've invested in different projects together, and, you know, I've made money with him. And then Tony stops him and says, listen, we had a phone call last night before you agreed to come on. You told me he owes you money. You told me he owes you $500,000 and there's a problem. DJ Envy start to stuttering. All of a sudden, the whole environment changes. And he says, no, he doesn't owe me $500,000. We invested in a property together and I just haven't got my money back yet. So he tries to walk it back. But what he doesn't realize is Tony records all phone conversations. All phone conversations are recorded when you talk to Tony. So later on, Tony plays a recording of him clearly stating that he knows something is wrong. Then remember the guy that I talked about earlier, the guy who owns the credit repair company, who DJ Envy, in my mind, he kind of strong arms him for 25% of his company. He is a victim of Cesar Pena. And they have DMs, they have several communications of him admitting the guy owes me money. And here's the crazy thing. In the communications, DJ Envy tells him, I told you not to invest your money with Cesar.
Yeah, if he knew he was a good investment, he wouldn't be telling people don't invest.
He said, I told you not to invest. Another person, apparently, based on reports, another big YouTuber by the name of Omi and the Hellcat. Now, Omi and the Hellcat is in jail right now for another fraud that was committed based on pirating a TV broadcast. But before he went to jail, Omi and the Hellcat said that he was going to invest with Cesar. All these names is tripping me up. Omi and the Hellcat, based on reports, told another YouTuber he was going to invest with Cesar Pena. But DJ Envy told him not to. Here's the problem that Eli, from What Happened in Common Sense, this is what he kind of brought to me that I wasn't even thinking about. DJ Envy is claiming he knew nothing of the investment issues, but we have case after case of him steering people. People who's close to him, he's saying, don't invest with Cesar, right? If they're close to him, he'll tell you don't invest with him. But he's constantly doing seminars and he's on his own podcast and radio show claiming that he is a great opportunity to invest with. You can partner with us. It's all of this stuff where he's steering his friends away. But everyday people who are claiming that they are victims of this so-called Ponzi scheme, he let them get in. To me, if he's not already trying to work out some plea deal, I think he's going to be behind bars. Because there's no way that he can walk back all of the digital footprints that he's made in this case when it comes to a multi-million-dollar Ponzi scheme that he's claiming he knew nothing about.
So the let's talk about that this for a second. The the indictment. Mm-hmm. Is DJ Envy named in the indictment, or is he like an unnamed co-conspirator?
He's unnamed in the indictment, but we clearly can see who they're referencing, but he's not referenced as a victim. I think this is important because he's claiming now that he's a victim, that he invested money and he didn't get money back. But let me pull it up. I have it right here.
Yeah, I was wondering, how do they just call him by his initials? Sometimes they'll just give you initials. Sometimes they'll call somebody, you know, unnamed co-conspirator, you know, B, right. You know, A, B, C.
This is how he's named. He says, Pena and his business partner, a well-known disc jockey and radio personality, Individual One. That's how he's Individual One. Business partner and Individual One.
So here's the thing. When this whole thing's going down, because I don't know if you realize this, because I've seen lots of indictments. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they'll give them initials. Sometimes it's like Individual One, Individual Two. You know, sometimes A, B, C. It depends on how the prosecutor wants to write it up.
Right.
And they'll list them as like an unnamed co-conspirator is, right?
Right.
So a lot of people don't realize, like, for instance, if DJ Envy, who's clearly got money, mm-hmm. sees this going down, if he at some point got concerned and told a few people and reached out to a criminal defense attorney, mm-hmm. that criminal defense attorney is going to go to the U.S. or he's going to say, you're going to be indicted. So your best bet is mm-hmm. to go in now and cooperate. Mm-hmm. If you go in now, we may be able to work it out so you're not indicted, mm-hmm. so that you're not held responsible. You'll testify in front of a grand jury. You'll help right. them acquire the indictment. You'll be a key witness if it goes mm-hmm. that far. Hopefully, just because of the urban community, mm-hmm. he obviously doesn't want to cooperate. Like, he doesn't want to be on the stand. He didn't even want his name on it. You know, you don't want to be a snitch.
Right, so, right.
But his lawyer, if he's smart, uh-huh. went to a lawyer, is going to say, look, you would rather go in and be the person that is the person who's a complainant mm-hmm. or a cooperating witness as opposed to being, you know, listed right along with him
right.
as being indicted. So what happens is those people, a lot of times, they don't name. People will be like, well, I don't understand why they didn't name this person. 90% of the time, it's because mm-hmm. 90% of the time, if they didn't name them, it's because they've already decided to cooperate. So they've right. already gone in, they cooperated, mm-hmm. they went in front of the grand jury, they helped you get. And usually, a lot of times, that will, sometimes they'll work out a deal with you where it's like, look, we won't charge you. It's called pretrial intervention. Mm-hmm. So sometimes they'll go in and they'll say, look, you pay back $5 million. You know, we looked at it. You explained everything, what was happening. You helped us. And it looks like you really only made this much money and you weren't that, you know, the prosecution, of course, the U.S. government, they'll either, you could be the same person, same exact thing. And this is the yeah. difference between cooperating and not cooperating. You don't cooperate. You're a scumbag. You are 100% guilty, just as guilty as him. You owe half the money. You owe all the money. You right. owe it us jointly and separately. You owe this, you know, you're a horrible person. You guided people. You robbed little old ladies. And then if you go in first and you talk to them, then right. it's like, you know, you weren't that involved. You didn't really know, you know, and we're going to let you pay. If you just, the way we figure, you maybe made a couple million. So, right. and you maybe contributed to a couple million. We're going to let you pay back a couple million and we'll mm-hmm. issue as an unnamed co-conspirator. You testify in front of the grand jury. And if he goes to trial, most likely he won't. If mm-hmm. he goes to trial, then we're going to have you testify. But we're going to try hard so that doesn't happen. And we'll try and keep your name out of it. And right. you're like, okay, thank you, thank you, thank you. Because if your defense attorney did the right thing, he scared the shit out of you. And let right. you know you're about to do 15 years. Yeah. Because I'll tell you one thing. After, you know, I know one of the victims is a guy that son died and he got like
it's a horrible settlement. Story. Yeah, it's and, a horrible yeah. story. Yeah.
Right. He's got like three kids. So my grandchildren are now living with me. Mm-hmm. My son, that we got a couple $100,000, which I was trying to invest for my grandkids. Mm-hmm. I gave it to Pena. He took all the money. It's gone. Now I got these three kids. How am I going to raise them? I work as a garbage man. You know, or yeah, I work yeah. at Walmart, or I work as whatever he does.
Yeah, I mean, it's the type of story that you don't want people to hear on the news, right? This guy, this guy invested money, then dies. But before he dies, he's trying to get the money back. Like
I didn't know that was. I thought he died, and they got like a settlement, and his father invested it for him. For his grandkids.
From what I remember, that could very well be. What I remember from the case was the guy who died invested the money, was trying to get the money back, then died before he got the money back. And now the grandfather is stepping in, trying to get the money back still from Cesar Pena.
Listen, you don't want to be in front of a judge at sentencing and have that guy stand up and explain that situation. Listen, I had, and even someone like DJ Envy, who's like, who might be like, I never met this guy. I don't know anything about him. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't.
Listen, I refinanced someone's house. They owner financed the house to me.
Uh-huh.
I convinced them to owner finance the house to me. Gave them 10% down, like 25 grand or something. Mm-hmm. They owner financed the house. I satisfy the loan on the house. I borrow a bunch of mortgages against them, mm-hmm. against the house. I pull out whatever. Half a, or no, it's like $700,000-$800,000, whatever. I walk away with, you know, I try and get away with money. I actually didn't get away with all of it, but whatever. I was close. Mm-hmm. And by the way, just so that everybody understands, they didn't lose their house. they filed some paperwork with the insurance companies. They got the, they didn't, you know, I think I owe them, they're part of my restitution. It's like 11 grand. They paid, not because I stole 11 grand from them. Mm-hmm. I cost them 11,000 to attorney's fees.
Oh, okay.
They had to pay an attorney and I owe the money for the attorney fees. You know, and by the way, these are not poor people. This is a rich doctor, whatever. I'm not trying to justify, well, maybe a little, but you know, it sounds worse than it is, but it's still, it's bad. It's still horrible. Here's the thing. Basically, these people end up getting the house back, but they had to pay an attorney like $10,000 or $11,000.
Right.
And, you know, they actually resold the house and, you know, so it's fine. But when I get in front of the, I get in front of the judge, mm-hmm. suddenly they had a sick child that needed surgery, that Mr. Cox knew this. I didn't know that. I never heard about a sick child. What are you talking about? Like, I mean, when I got in front of the judge, people are saying stuff that I'm like, what is going on? Like, you know, this person was in a wheelchair. What? Who was in a wheelchair? I never met that person. I don't know. You know, it, and these are, it's, oh, you can imagine.
Oh.
Like, you can't get in front of a judge and have people saying stuff like that. It's the absolute, like, you're already a scumbag.
Right.
Now you're just a scumbag of like the fourth magnitude or something. Like, it's going to be horrific. And I'm sure his attorney told him that.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a very good chance that that, you know, DJ Envy already went and has already worked out his deal.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, I think so.
For him to now say, you know, I'm a victim, like his lawyer needs to explain to him, like, shut your mouth. Stop talking. Like, you don't, if you, so you can get a deal. Here's what people don't understand. You can get a deal and they think, oh, I already got my deal. Oh, don't think the feds won't yank it out from underneath you.
Mm.
If you irritate them, you go around talking about the case, talking about how you didn't do anything and doing like, stop. They're like, that's a bad idea, bro. If your lawyer said, don't talk, like maybe not talk. You already got a deal. Don't ruin it.
That's the key. His business is talking, right?
His business
isn't just talking, but it's talking about messy stuff in urban culture. So it's extremely hard for him to avoid the conversation, because if this would happen to one of the many urban celebrities, that when stuff like this pops up, he's laughing and he's making fun of it on his show, how can he now avoid the uncomfortable conversations of allegations of scamming in his life? Because you can name any big celebrity in urban culture, anytime they had a scandal, that scandal was highly featured on his show. So I know his lawyer is probably telling him, don't talk, but that will hurt his brand just as much as being a snitch to not talk about it, because now he has every enemy that he made in the industry that he's in. Now they get to do to him what he's been doing to others for decades.
Listen, it's no fun when the rabbit has a gun. You know what I mean? This is a perfect example of that. Oh, man. Well, I was going to. So let's talk about Pena for a second here. So,
Okay. You
know, and I'm going to mention, I'll mention this is that, you know, when I first got out, right? Like I taught the real estate class and did all that. Mm-hmm. Like when I first got out, after I was on, I went on Concrete and I got a bunch of views. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was thinking about starting a channel and was kind of, you know, really the same time you and I started talking. Mm-hmm. So I remember, so I had a buddy and I had a couple of buddies. I actually know multiple people that sounds so horrible. I know multiple people that have Lamborghinis for some reason. Not that I have any money, but I know guys that have money. And one of the guys was like, listen, well, one of the guys was like, look, you know, we can get a bunch of pictures of you in my car, mm-hmm. driving my car, put it on social media. And then I had another guy who lives, there are these two buildings in downtown Tampa mm-hmm. that are like super tall. I mean, it's like way high skyscrapers. It's all residential living. And one of these guys lives on not the top floor, but the second to the top floor. Mm-hmm. And he was like, bro, we come in here, take pictures of here, you on the balcony. Like, we could really set you up to do seminars and do this, do that. And I was just like, I feel like that's the kind of thing that got me in prison. like it wasn't seminars, but it's lying. And I kind of promised myself in prison, I wasn't going to do that kind of stuff. And so I was like, yeah, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm good. Sometimes you got to fake it till you make it. No, you don't really have to. Like, I don't have a problem with that. But I mean, if you have nine lives, if you have two lives, if you have a second chance, whatever, I burn those. It's over. You know, if you're smart, you go to prison, you realize, you know what? Mm-hmm. I'm better off living in someone's spare room and working at McDonald's than coming back here or even coming close.
Right.
I don't even have the conversations with people that I think could get me coming close. So even if I have guys that reach out to me and say, bro, like, I'll give you money if you'll just talk to me about this and about, and they're like, they're scams. Like, you start to realize, oh, right, you're talking about me helping you do a scam. Nah, right, bro, I would never tell. Stop it. Cause I'll tell.
they want the game. They want the sauce.
I thought you said salt. Yeah. They want the sauce. What is it? The band man, Kevo or whatever his name is. He's the worst. But so these guys, they call me up. Listen, I had one guy, and I know anybody listening has heard me say this before, but I would tell people, like, I text, you know, they hit me up on Instagram and I'm like, yeah, bro, I'm not interested. Thanks. I had one guy that hit me up and basically kind of started up a conversation. You probably have these kind of fans that they end up saying, asking you a question or two and you answer them and you can almost kind of become friendly.
Okay.
And then one day the guy was from New York. And one day he said, listen, like, he's asking me like advice and I'm giving him dad advice, you know, nothing, you know, very, the vanilla, the advice that I got as a dad that honestly, 80% of the people that reach out to me, like, didn't have dads or anybody. So I give him the very basic, work hard, save your money, live under, you know, but this guy ends up, he tells me, look, I went to prison. You know, I've been to prison. This is what happened. And, whatever. And he went to prison, got out. He's kind of restarted his life. He's got like a hair. He got a couple salons that he owns and one's like in Manhattan. It does really well. Anyway, so we're going back and forth. And one day he says, hey, man, by the way, and this is after 6 months, I'm coming to Tampa. Okay. So he says, I said, okay. He said, man, I'd love to buy you coffee. I'm like, okay. Now I said, what are you coming to Tampa for? He's like, oh, my girlfriend lives in Tampa. And I'd never heard that in 6 months. I'd never heard that. Right. I was like, oh, okay. But I'm also talking to this guy once a week, maybe every 2 weeks. And these are very brief, very cursory conversations, most of them.
Right.
So he comes to Tampa. I drive out. Listen, I drove like 30 minutes to go have coffee with this guy just to be a nice guy. So I go to Starbucks. He buys me a cup of coffee. We sit down. He's like, okay. And we talk for a couple of minutes. And in the middle of talking, he says, look, man, I came out here because I wanted you to know that I'm for real. And I went, oh, okay. About what? And he goes, you know, I wanted to let you know, like, I'm a real dude. Like, this isn't some bullshit. Like, I'm a stand-up guy. We've been talking. We're friendly. And I wanted to ask you some advice, but I wanted to fly down here and ask you in person because, you know, I'm that kind of guy. And I thought, I don't know what that means. But I was like, okay, well, I go, well, what's the advice? Like, what do you mean? He said, listen, if you could help me run a scam, I just need like $500,000. He is like, we could get like a $500,000 or get like $1 million. He said, I'll split it with you. And I went, okay. I said, so what is it you want me to do? He's like, you know, you can show me like how to run the real estate scam. Help me kind of walk me through it. I said, all right. I said, listen, I owned a mortgage company for 3 or 4 years. And I had years of experience prior to that, a couple of years. So it's like 5 years experience committing fraud on a fairly regular basis. And I said, do you think I can sit down and have a conversation with you and explain to you within an hour or two how I did what I was doing and you're going to be able to pull it off? I said, the skill set that I have would take an exhausted amount of time to convince you of, or sorry, to educate you on.
Right.
And even then, it's still trial and error. You're going to fuck up a few times.
Of course.
Which I said, when you fuck up, that's going back to prison. So I said, so it'd take years. And he's like, well, what if I, man, if you just help me like line it up, like I'll go in the bank and like, I was like, yeah, but you'll get caught. Something will happen. I said, you'll tell somebody, you'll tell a friend, you'll suddenly have this money and you'll tell this person or tell that person. Mm-hmm. No, I wouldn't do that. He said, bro, I said, you'll get caught. He said, even if I got caught, bro, like I didn't tell on nobody when I went to prison last time. I ain't going to tell on you. I said, yeah, but this is the feds and you're going to be doing time like you can't believe. Mm-hmm. You can't believe the numbers they'll give out. You'll tell. Right. And he's like, no, I wouldn't do that, bro. I said, the real problem is this. I said, that you think that you have to tell. And he goes, what do you mean? I said, I'm already on your indictment. He goes, what do you mean? I said, when they grab you for running this scam, right. I said, they're going to grab your phone. Not that they need your phone. Mm. You know, they can get it off the cloud or whatever. But let's say they grab your phone. I said, they're going to go into your phone. Mm-hmm. They're going to run all the numbers. And they're going to see that one of those numbers is a number to a guy who ran the same scam that you just got caught for. I said, that guy's Matt Cox. He's currently on probation. This would be his third conviction for the same scam. And they know that I'm on conviction. And they know the first time I was on probation, I stole $11.5 million. Then when I took off on the run, I stole another fucking $3 or $4 million. I said, so they're going to believe I'm definitely capable of it.
Absolutely. Said, so
they're going to add me to the indictment. They're not even going to have a conversation with me. Because they don't have to. They could just walk into the grand jury and say, hey, by the way, this number came up on his phone. He'd been talking to the guy 6 months. I said, they're going to know you bought a ticket. You flew down here. They're going to know that when you were down here, you texted me several times because we arranged this meeting. And at this point, we believe that Cox talked to him and told him how to run the scam. I said, right. I said, do you understand? I said, they're just going to explain they're going to pull out some sheets of paper and they're going to say, and by the way, he's done this multiple times. I'm on the indictment. I said, because I've been indicted and I've been convicted of multiple felonies exactly mm-hmm. like this. I said, I cannot even go to trial and get on the stand and defend myself because the moment I do, they can bring up all those charges. Right. So I said, I have to sit there and let the U.S. attorney explain through documentation how he believes I'm involved. Mm-hmm. I said, honestly, I said, if I was sitting on that jury, knowing what I know right now, I said, I'd convict me. Knowing I didn't do anything based on what they're going to tell them. I said, and that's before they go to you and say, listen, you stole $1 million. You got caught. Mm-hmm. We got some of the money back. You can plead guilty and say nothing and take it on the chin. You've got a criminal record. You've been in prison. You've been on probation several times. You got a criminal record. You're like a level 4. You're mm-hmm. going to get 10 years for that million. Or you can testify against Matt Cox, who we desperately want, and you'll do 2 years. And that guy's, and then then you're going to say, nah, I ain't going to do that, man. I'm not like that. And then they're going to say, do you love your children? Who's going to take care of your children? Who's going to take care of your mother and father, who he was taking care of, by the way? What about your business? Do you think that somebody's going to run your business? Do you think that, I said, they're going to say all that. And they're going to say, you're going to do all this for some scumbag? That's going to prison no matter what. We've already got him indicted. Cox is already trying to get a fucking deal for 5 years. And we know he didn't do nothing. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, he's going to testify. I'm like, I said, you don't have to. I said, because I'm going to take a plea. As soon as they get me in the room and they show me all their evidence that they have, and I know how the feds work, I said, I'm going to say, can I get a plea? I'm not going to trial. I'm going to ask to get a plea because I think I'm guilty. And he just was like, damn, bro, like I didn't think about I won't get caught. I said, Oh.
Hey, that's what I was waiting for. I just there needed your personal guarantee that you won't get caught.
Right. What's wrong with people? Like, but I've had multiple that was the worst one because the guy actually flew down
the conversation
with him. And I've had multiple conversations, you know, with these guys. And that conversation went on and on. He's like, well, what if I gave you like if I gave you 10 grand? No. Well, what if I gave you? No, no. But I've had so many of those conversations. So to me, some people go to prison. They realize they're in a horrible position. They just never be in that position again. And that's mm-hmm. me. Some mm-hmm. of the guys go in, they learn a little bit.
Right.
They get out and they try something. So I could see, I could see Pena getting out, having some knowledge, flipping a couple of houses, getting right. the lingo down.
Yep, the buzzwords, the things that he needs to convince people who have no idea about real estate investing, he's going to sound like an expert to them.
Oh, listen, if I talk to somebody for 20 minutes about real estate, even now, you know, I just got out of federal prison. You know, it was for bank fraud. You know, it was related to real estate. I got people that are like, yo, bro, if you want to go into business, we can put everything in my name. Like I'll put up the money. Well, this, and I'm thinking, what are you doing? I'm a convicted fraudster. Not once, multiple times. So, you know, my advice is, it was in the cabinet. Why? So sorry, that's my wife. was it yours? Oh yeah, it was there. I guess I drank her chamomile. the judgment, bro. With the box. So it's like people, like, you would think going to prison, he would be smart enough to know all of this will come back on me. So at some point he had to think, when he started asking for money, that he knew he couldn't invest. And look, if he has flipped houses, then he knows how hard it is.
Right. Right.
These shows are bullshit.
Yeah. I was about to say the TV shows make it look like, oh, you buy a house for $50,000, you put $25,000 in it, then now you're selling it for $500,000. They don't even give real numbers. They give projected numbers. They don't talk about all the other crap that happened in the house. I mean, they really have a large group of people who are addicted to watching those shows. They really have them confused of thinking that, oh, I just need $20,000 to get started and I can be a multimillionaire. That's not how it works.
No. Listen, so many things go wrong on the every time I've done a rehab. First of all, every time I've done a rehab, you know, you buy it for $50,000. You think, okay, it needs $25,000 in work. I'm going to make $25,000. That never happened one time. And I mean, I've made money. Like, I've made $100,000. I made, but if you made $100,000, I thought I was going to make $150,000.
Right.
If you made $15,000, you thought you were going to make $25,000. You know, if you thought it was $25,000 in renovations, it was $35,000.
It's always.
There's so many, and if you thought you were going to have this thing renovated in a month, back on the market, and sold within three, it was going to be a turnaround time of 90 days, you're fucking delusional. That never happens. Listen, committing fraud, like, I can get anybody in that, anybody qualified, it doesn't happen in 90 days.
Right.
Like, you don't need your down payment, a job, credit, nothing. I need a warm body to show up. It's still more than
still takes time. But you don't have the thing that I've witnessed.
You can be a fake person. You can be a fake person. It's not more than 90 days.
I'm always amazed. And it's a weird thing. I've seen it for so long. I'm always amazed by people's desire to be wealthy. Their desire to be wealthy blocks all logic that they demonstrate in other parts of their lives. I try to tell people that being a victim of a scam is not an intelligence test. You know, being a victim of a scam doesn't mean you're dumb. Now, let's be clear. There's a lot of marks that, you know, you can tell they're not that high on the scale. But you can become a victim based solely on your desire to be wealthy. That's it. And that desire to be wealthy clouds your judgment, because we look at wealth, and I say this a lot. In the United States, people believe in wealth the same way that a 15-year-old boy who's addicted to porn believes in intimacy, right? A porn addict believes that money shots and rough sex is what intimacy is. In the U.S., especially in urban culture, we think wealth is flying in a jet, throwing money in the air. Like, that's what being wealthy is. In reality, that's fake wealth. Like, real wealthy people don't do that. But our desire to be wealthy like that will let you block out all logic in your mind. It'll let you mortgage your home to give to a convicted felon to flip for you a couple of times, because you want a piece of the American dream that does not exist. And that drive to be a part of something that doesn't exist leads many people to being a victim.
Well, what their version of the American dream, because I think the American dream does exist. The problem with the American dream is is it's working 40 or 50 hours a week. It's mm-hmm. living below your means. It's putting money aside. It's buying a house and mm-hmm. it's having that house paid off by the time you're 60 or 65. So yep. you can retire on what little pension you have, if you're lucky, and Social Security.
Yep.
Because if you don't own a house, if your house isn't owned outright by the time you collect Social Security, you're kind of fucked.
Yeah, you can't, you can't carry the weight of a mortgage. I tell all my clients, the plan is to have that mortgage paid off by the time you retire, because the weight of that is going to have you greeting people at Walmart if you still have a mortgage in your 60-something years old. It's not going to happen to you. So yeah, that's a great point. The American dream in most people's mind is a perverse thing. They don't understand what reality is. They don't understand how you can live a good life and not be balling out of control. That's the problem.
Being a convicted felon, I and having a YouTube channel, I've been approached, you know, you get approached by people to say, hey, you know, I'll pay you this much if you'll advertise this or advertise that.
Right.
So I've been multiple times, and this was a couple of years ago, we would get approached by cryptocurrency guys starting a cryptocurrency.
Yep.
And you know, and at there at one point, typically it's just a standard email and we ignore it. Mm-hmm. Or I would forward it to Colby, my mm-hmm. editor, and he would review it and look at it and come back. And he'd say, hey, they're offering this, but honestly, I think it's probably a scam and it'll go under in 6 months. So I don't know if we want to be involved in that. It's up to you. Right. I was like, no, I don't want to do that. So we had one guy that really hounded me. Like, he was really Instagram, everything. Like, look, if I just talk to you, I really, you know, this, and I was like, no, I don't know enough about it. It seems mm-hmm. like a scam. No, it's not a scam. I could put you, get, I want to do, have a meeting with you. So we actually had a meeting with him. I think it was Colby. I think Colby was on it. I think it was me, Colby, him, and two other guys. So we had multiple, we had a meeting with like four or five people on it, and mm-hmm. they're going through the scam or going through the crypto thing, how they're, you know, what it's based on and all this mm-hmm. stuff. And they have this huge thing. It was a long thing, but in the end, when it was finally said and done, I said, well, let Colby and I will talk about it. And look, they were, once again, you don't have to have much knowledge to make somebody else think you're an expert.
Right.
So Colby and I got off and I was like, it sounds really legit. And it sounds like this. And he's like, it does. And Colby goes, I said, well, how much do you know about it? He said, man, I don't know anything about it. Like, it sounds good. And but it's up to you. And I said, my problem is I don't think I would know if it was a scam or not. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it could be a scam. And I think crypto in general is a scam in a way. You may have a different, you know, but look, if I buy stock in Ford, I've got something. So that's what I understand. And maybe that's old fashioned. So no, anyway,
it's real. So to me, crypto is basically a public ledger, a public database where you incentivize people all around the world to keep record of this public database by giving them that same crypto. But ultimately, what is it worth? What business problem does it solve for the marketplace? And when you have so many people getting hype over it, and you can become a millionaire overnight, it is the greatest breeding ground for grifters. It's the great opportunity to come into an unregulated market where you have a bunch of people thinking that they can become millionaires if they get involved. There's no way you're going to be able to reel in all the hustlers that are going to take advantage of that opportunity.
Right. Well, so what ended up happening is, you know, Colby and I, like that one that was really, they were really pushing and they were serious and they had their, you know, whatever, their scam laid out or whatever it was. I said, you know, my fear is, Colby, I said, I think they're probably honest about it. Like, they seem honest and they seem, and Colby was like, right. I was like, they did seem genuine. I said, I agree. I said, but in the end, I can't jeopardize my freedom, because even if they had good intentions,
right,
if it goes bad, completely not their fault, let's say it goes bad, mm-hmm. and one person calls my probation officer or files something with the court or goes to the U.S. attorney, I said, I'm going to be in front of a judge. Right. And what am I going to say? No, Your Honor, what happened? Wasn't there going to be like, yeah, let's play the tape. And I'm sitting there going, this is a great opportunity, you guys. And I'm doing the whole thing. And I'm like, I said, like, I'm going to look bad. And right. that judge is going to throw me in jail. And I can't give him that opportunity. That's what is the interesting thing is, like, I don't know why Pena didn't at least take that into consideration. Like, and I kind of get it in a way, because I can tell you right now, if you get away with something once, to a normal people person, they're like, whew.
Right.
Like, did it once, got away with it. Thank God. Don't mm-hmm. do that again. But to a criminal, you become emboldened.
Right.
I'm just that good. Got away with it. I know what I'm doing. Oh, I got away with that. I can get away with this. Oh, I got away with that. Damn, I'm good.
Right.
And I think that's what happened. He probably borrowed some money from somebody, you know, and then mm-hmm. invested it, maybe even paid them back. Who knows? Mm-hmm. And then, you know what I'm saying? Like, maybe he had invested and did something, and maybe, you know, they gave him 50 grand and he gave him back, you know, 55 or 60. And right. then somebody said, we should start borrowing money, or you should think about that. And he said, yeah, you're right. And then the next thing you know, people were giving him money and he bought a car and he bought a house and he bought this. And he thought, now I need to borrow. And it just spiraled out of control to the point where it's mm-hmm. like, you know, like we talked about, like, you don't want to start telling people I fucked up.
Right. You know? I can't make the return. Every Ponzi schemer that I have ever witnessed or had an opportunity to talk to, the worst thing to them was not failing. The worst thing to them is having to give the money back.
Right.
Which would have been the easiest way to walk away and just say, you know what? I thought I was going to be able to make X return when I promised it to you. I wasn't. I started losing money. Let me just give you 60% of your money back, or let me give you 50% of your money back. They're like, no, they believe so much into the hype of themselves, and they like the lifestyle that they created for themselves, that they decide to keep going. Here's another yeah. point, because I know a little bit of your history. I watch a lot of your interviews. You actually lived the life and had the money prior to going to prison. Right. You are able yeah. to get some cars and live a nice lifestyle. You are around with pretty girls and stuff like that. So after going to jail, it's not like, oh, you know, now you're like, I don't want to risk it anymore. Based on what I'm seeing from Cesar Pena, he went to jail on like some petty credit card fraud stuff. He wasn't like a guy who ever lived the lifestyle that he was able to live, you know, according to the indictment. Based on this scam. I mean, he wasn't in fancy cars or living in mini mansions and stuff like that, and then went to jail and was able to say, I don't want to come back. He was a petty grifter, goes to right. jail, and then now he has an opportunity to work with a national figure, to meet celebrities. Oh, if you go to his Instagram, it's a who's who of people he's taking pictures with. And I'm also being told that many of these celebrities, like Snoop Dogg and stuff like that, they also were investors in different projects, because, like we were talking about with crypto, they also had an element of crypto in the scam as well. It wasn't just real estate, because crypto was so big during the pandemic, they created a crypto thing. So they called it, the original company was like Flip House or Flip something. Like, he was in flipping NJ. So they created this company called Flip to Dow. For the crypto bros out there who are going to say, JT, you don't know what you're talking about. I agree. I don't know crypto like that. I know investments. I don't know crypto like that. But a DAO is supposed to be like this decentralized autonomous organization, which basically is, you give people fractional shares of something, and now they are kind of like shareholders where you vote on stuff. Well, he created like this real estate crypto thing where people would come in, they'll be able to get courses. All these grifters have a course. They'd learn how to invest in real estate from the course, but they'll also be investors in real estate projects through this crypto thing. And DJ Envy is listed as a co-founder in this company before they scrubbed it. But of course, we got the Wayback Machine, and we can right. see where he's listed as a co-founder of this Flip the Dow crypto slash real estate investing BS. And the way that they were promoting it, they was like, this is your opportunity to invest in real estate, but own fractional shares, to not have to invest in actually buying the property yourself, but you can own fractional shares.
I feel
if
like
you don't know how stupid that sounds. I think that's called a real estate investment trust.
That yeah, you I was going to say, do you have to be licensed? Right. You have to be licensed to do that.
All of this is unregulated. That's why a lot of grifters love the crypto space. It's unregulated. You don't, it's the wild, wild west. So you can invest in crypto, but what they're saying is the money that you're using to invest in crypto, we're going to use it to invest in real estate. And then you get a fractional share of the rental property and the flips. Well, why don't you just do a real estate investment trust? Because with that, you have to register with the security boards, either with the state or the SEC, and it's harder to do the grift. So these guys, I mean, I see why clearly it happened to you. You're going to protect your freedom at all costs. But what was he protecting? Prior to this grift, what life did he have to protect? This is an opportunity for him to rub elbows with celebrities that I'm sure he's looked up to all his life. We're talking about hip hop stars, movie stars, TV personalities. He's now being treated as if he's on the level of these people because he's doing the podcast. He even 50 Cent. So, you know, the rapper and multimedia mogul 50 Cent. He was, I believe, projected to be an executive producer on a TV show that would have featured DJ Envy and Cesar Pena doing like flipping houses, like an HGTV show. So there was nothing but upside in his mind with this grift. Like going back to prison is not the worst thing. The worst thing is missing out on this opportunity. When his wife, get this, when his wife is interviewed by the news in New Jersey about this grift, because at this point, Cesar Pena is, you know, he's been arrested and everything. She walks out there and the woman is asking about where's the money? The victims want to know where the money is. She looks dead into the camera and says, we don't know where the money is. Wearing a Chanel sweater that costs $1,200.
Right.
Like how tone deaf could you be to walk out there and say, I don't know where the money is, wearing a $1,200 sweater?
Right. It's like getting out of a Lamborghini, wearing a mink with your diamond ring, your diamonds on all your ring, you know, or all your fingers. I was going to say, how much money are we talking about?
Multiple millions. Based on what Tony Robinson has calculated, based on a lot of the victims showing receipts, showing canceled checks and stuff like that, he calculated somewhere near $50 million. $50 million.
It's hard to piss away $50 million.
Oh, it's extremely. I mean, I know a lot of people that can throw money around, but to get rid of that much money is hard. Now,
right. You still have to have bought something. Because you can't consume that much. So it has to be in diamonds, or it has to be in jewelry, has to be in real estate, has to be in vehicles, has to be, like, it's got to be somewhere. Because it just doesn't keep that cost that much money. Vacations, I still can't. I don't see how you can spend $50 million. Like,
yeah, in five to six years, $50 million is extremely, extremely hard. I mean, it's not as if he was paying taxes on this money. Right. It's not as if all of a sudden he's got tax returns showing, because these are investors. Right. That's not taxable income when someone invests in your company. So it's not, you know, it's not something that they report as taxable income. But here's the other side of it. Right before he was arrested for the alleged Ponzi scheme, him and his wife filed for bankruptcy. And there's issues right now, I believe. Yeah. In a few days. I believe February the 29th, so it's a leap year. On February the 29th, he's actually due in court because he's not complying with the bankruptcy court by giving all the documents that they're requesting. And I believe a judge issued that if he does not, he will be going back to jail. So yeah, the money's somewhere. And the reason I'm thinking that's the reason why he's not being upfront and open with the bankruptcy court, because the money, $50 million is hard. But I will say this, I was privileged enough to see some bank statements. Now, remember that Flip the Dow company that I talked about, which was these investors that's supposed to be like this whole crypto BS?
Right.
I was able to see a bank statement for that company. And I'm seeing deposits, right? This is supposedly deposits from investors giving them money. Immediately after a deposit from an alleged investor goes into this business bank account, that's supposed to be for fractional ownership shares in some sort of real estate thing, we see debits of Taco Bell, DoorDash. Like immediately, like as soon as money comes in, this man goes to Taco Bell. Can you believe a man goes to Taco Bell more than one time a day? Talk about three times in one day he went to Taco Bell.
He hit it big every time somebody invested. He was like, yeah, Taco Bell.
I guess that was like the reward that he gave himself. Like stuff like that is so clear that there was no real long-term gain. Right. There's no end game. Like he didn't have some sort of master plan to kind of wrap this thing up. I believe he was going and running as fast and getting as much money as he could till he got to this point. I believe he knew this point was going to come, because at the bare minimum, can we make a transfer from the business account to your personal account before you buy Taco Bell? You're buying Taco Bell the moment that the money comes in the account. I mean, that's the signs of a person that is not thinking in the long term. He's only thinking the short term of what I can get. And then when you compound that with allegations of money laundering with drug money, this guy knew he was living on borrowed time with this scheme.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wrote a story about a guy who ran a Ponzi scheme, by the way. It wasn't really a Ponzi scheme. He never gave anybody their money back. It was just a straight theft. But literally, it's funny. You could see the bank accounts. Like, you know, I got all the, I got all of his discovery. And like someone would come and they would deposit $11,000. Mm-hmm. And immediately, $6,000 for insurance for his airplane. You know, $3,000 to his kid's school. $4,000 to pay for his kid's summer camp,
right?
Like immediately. Then 2 weeks later, somebody gives him $29,000. Immediately, he pays back. You know, his mortgage company gets a check for $8,000. Immediately, all of his private, personal bills straight out of the business account. Mm-hmm. You know, or sometimes he might deposit money into his personal account because there were debits that were coming out. So $2,000 in that account, whoo, just made it. You know, it's like, it's funny because like I was going to say, Cesar Pena, like if he isn't already cooperating, which he'd be a complete idiot to think he could just deny this away, then he's probably getting arrested very soon.
Yeah. You know? I mean, ultimately, my biggest beef with this, you know, when you set aside the fact that you have a bunch of people who are investing their life savings with a convicted criminal who went to jail for fraud, which is absurd. One of my biggest issues is the abuse of influence. During the pandemic, many, 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 many so-called podcast hosts and online influencers use their influence to manipulate their audience to enrich themselves to the point of insanity. You have big guys, you have Floyd Mayweather, who did a bunch of Ponzi things and he promoted different cryptocurrencies. You have a lot of guys who, when it comes down to it, you ask yourself the question, like, at what point is enough enough? Because we're not talking about people who are broke. You know, these are supposed to be like high level celebrities and people who have, you know, good paying jobs and status. DJ Envy should be a millionaire based purely on being a DJ and hosting that show. Right. At what point does he say, I need to partner with a convicted felon to bring people into a real estate Ponzi scheme? Like, what's the point other than vanity? I mean, I know hip hop culture is a very competitive culture. Like, people literally went on that show to DJ Envy's face and said, well, you're just an employee. You're not a boss. And I think that kind of hurt his pride to the point where he's like, I'm going to show y'all I can make money outside of this show. And now he finds himself, you know, being partnered with a man who's indicted by the U.S. government for a Ponzi scheme. You got to say, you know, it doesn't matter what other people think.
What? And a Ponzi scheme
is secure myself.
And a Ponzi scheme that's targeting lower income, you know,
right,
blacks that idolize me. I'm going to take advantage of this. Mm-hmm. I'm instead of saying, wow, I'm in a great position and being humble and thankful, you know, being appreciative of the position that he has.
Right.
It's no. How can I take advantage of this?
Yeah. It's that competitiveness, right? It's right. The concept of, you know, now he's doing car shows. He has this like ridiculous car collection because he's competing with other celebrities like Rick Ross. Like Rick Ross has a car show where he shows off his car collection. DJ Envy has a car show where he's showing off his car collection. And they're literally online beefing with each other over whose car show is better. Like, this is what you're going to risk your reputation and your freedom over, a vanity play with other celebrities. I don't get it.
Well, you know, it's funny. We can wrap it up. I know you give me plenty of time. I appreciate it. What I was going to say is, it's the same thing I think we talked about earlier. Is like, it's the same thing that you and Eli said. What was that? Like, look, you know, people that are genuinely legitimate people that are helping you invest are not running around in Lamborghinis, flashing a bunch of diamonds, acting like jackasses, you know, embedded in hip hop. Like how many people do you have to see that just, you know, they drive 200 miles straight into the wall after acting like a fool to raise a bunch of money and convince you they're going to make you rich. And, but really they're rich because of the scam that they're running on you. You know, real people that really make money and really understand, you know, investing are geeks. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're not flashy. They're not the cool kid. They're not driving a fucking Lamborghini. They're driving a decent, reliable. And listen, I used to borrow money from guys all the time, like hard money lenders. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'd have a hard money lender that he's got a couple million dollars of his own money. He's got another couple million dollar in, credit line with the bank, because that's typically mm-hmm. what they do. They use some of their money, and then if they need additional money, they go to the bank, because when you borrow from the bank, if you use your own money, you're making 20, maybe 20% on your money, because, you know, they charge 12% plus 2% for the loan. Then they charge every time they have to come out and release more money for draws to do renovation. So it ends mm-hmm. up, and if they flip that same money enough times a year, they make 20, 22%, because they're not, that 12% and those 2 points. Right. They flips over every 4 months. Mm-hmm. So you start adding that up to the 12, it's 22%, 23%. So those guys come in, but that's their money. Like if they include the bank in that, they got to pay the bank 3 or 4%. That's not part of that's not part of the plan. We don't want to do that, but we have the credit line.
Right.
So these guys would show up, I shit you not, in 10-year-old Volvos. Mm-hmm. Your car's 10 years old. You're a multi-millionaire. You live in $1.5 million house. Like, and that's in like Tennessee. Right. That's a nice house. That's not California. You know, $1.5 million house or $2 million house in Tampa or Tennessee or Alabama is a mansion.
Yeah.
And this was 20 years ago. Like mm-hmm. these guys, every guy I knew that did this, guys that owned, they ran the pension fund for the law firm they were a part of. And they, one of the things they did was they invested in real estate, hard money lending. Huh. This guy's been a lawyer for 30 years, runs the pension fund. He shows up in a 10-year-old Mercedes. Like, it's 10 years old. And it's not, we're not talking about a big body Benz. We're talking about, this thing's like this is something your mom would drive. Like, this is a low grade. And it's just like,
right, base model.
Right. But he lives in a $2 million house. Like, he's investing in his house, but mm-hmm. he doesn't invest in things that depreciate.
Right.
Not the watch, not the car, because that Lamborghini is super cool that you bought for $400,000. But if you turn around and need to borrow against it or turn it in, it's worth $250.
Yeah.
6 months later, it's worth $250.
Yeah.
You're an idiot. You know what I'm saying? Like, if that was your, like, if you're telling me, yeah, man, I'm a good investor, you're driving a fucking Lamborghini, bro.
Right.
That thing's worth $250. Man, I paid $400,000 6 months ago. You can't get $250 for it now. But yeah, they don't think like, oh, my watch is $100,000 watch. We'll try and sell it for $100.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, it's not worth $100, bro. It's no. not. It's worth maybe $50 now. And that's if you find another sucker like you. So, you know, and they just don't, you know, they don't, it's not smart. It's not.
No.
The guy that's driving the 10-year-old vehicle and looks like he wears those jeans five times a week. And, you know, that guy, and he's got a Timex or he's wearing an Iron Man, you know, that's the guy, you know what I'm saying? That's the guy I want to invest with. And you're right. You know, and he's got credentials, or he's been in the business for 10 or 20 years. And he can tell you 20 people that will tell you this guy's amazing, bro. Yeah, no, he's solid. And he's not promising something outrageous. Mm-hmm. It's reasonable. It's doable. Yeah. That's why Bernie Madoff went so long. The returns were a little bit higher than most. They were a little bit higher than most.
Yeah, it was just steady. Steady,
right.
steady,
but
steady.
It was reasonable. Mm-hmm. Those guys that say, oh, 30% in 3 months or 20% in 3 months. Are you out? The man that 30% in three, like that's 120%. You're making over 100% a year. That's not compounded.
The thing that kills me about that is that some people think that they're extremely special. And I'm not, I don't want to be that guy to say, hey, you know, but why? For the love of God, why would someone who's a multimillionaire come to you and take your life savings of $120,000 and pay you 30% over a few months? Why does he need you? Like, I don't understand why people don't ask themselves that question. Why does the multimillionaire, the guy with everything I want, why does he need me? Oh, he's doing me a favor. He's doing me a favor to make me rich. I've never seen that ever in my history of being a financial advisor of a multimillionaire doing someone a favor of making them rich. That's not how it works.
It's funny too, because that the same, you know, people don't realize, like, it's like somebody's worth, you know, $50 million, and they're pissed because they lost $2,000, and people are like, well, what's he pissed for? He's got $50 million. Nobody wants to lose any money. It may not have financially hurt him, but I promise you, he's pissed about that $2,000. Nobody wants to get fucked. Doesn't matter how much it hurts you. And people don't realize, oh, if I had $50 million, yeah, okay. Well, I wouldn't care about $2,000. If you had struggled to get $50 million, you'd be pissed about the $2,000.
Good.
So, yeah, I mean, obviously there's, at some point, there is a point where you start spending ridiculous money. But these are the billionaires. These are the guys that are worth $200 billion. And they know no matter how much I no matter how many stupid things I can get, you know, Jeff Bezos can spend $80 million on a yacht because he's Jeff Bezos and he could just never blow enough money at this point. Right. He knows it's good.
It's not going to happen. Yeah, you know? It's not going to happen.
But I appreciate you talking with me about this.
Oh, no, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and it's funny too, because real quick, like when we first met a few years ago, right? Like 3 years ago, right? Because I hadn't even, had I even started my channel? I don't think I even started.
I think you might have had it, but I doubt you had more than 1,000 subs. It was mainly your interviews that you did on other podcasts.
Right. So that would have been a little over 3 years ago we spoke for the first time.
Because it was before the pandemic.
Right. Oh, yeah. Okay. Cool. Well, you know what? Then... Yeah, definitely. And I do remember that I was staying in someone's spare room. Like I had started putting up videos while I was living in this person's spare room. And I just started putting up some videos. Cause I remember the first time I spoke with you, I remember talking to the woman's house I lived in about you, you know, because I was telling her the story about the guy that you called me about.
Right.
And I remember her going, "What?" And I was like, "Yeah, this guy was a complete psychopath. Like, it was disturbing what a psychopath he was." But anyway, and then you started your channel.
Yeah.
How long after that? During the pandemic?
Yeah, it was. I think I probably waited towards the end of 2020. So my first video I uploaded was like November of 2020, and I got to thank you, and I want to thank you publicly, because the advice that you gave me about that potential podcast that I was going to do, it helped create the blueprint of what Pocket Watching with JT is now. And now I'm at 118,000 subs. And, it really created a lane for how I can do my show. So I want to say thank you. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it. I mean, and it's super unique. You know, your show is, you've got it. You've definitely got a niche. I was going somewhere with this. Yeah. How did you name the channel? It's Pocket Watching.
Yes, Pocket Watching with JT. All right. So for those people out there who's like, why would you name it that? All right. So I am an actual financial advisor. I am licensed to give people tax and financial advice. In my world, I have clients and they watch social media just like everybody else. And they see these grifters just like everybody else. But they'll call me up and they'll say, "Hey, JT, check out this video. And I like what I'm hearing, but I want to see if we can add it to my financial plan." 99% of the time, it's the grifters, right? 99% of the time, the stuff that they're talking about is not only bad financial advice, it's potentially illegal to do. And I would give them my reaction. I would draft up a letter explaining why what they want to do is stupid. And I'd bill them for the hour. But I thought to myself, it might be cool if I make reaction videos to this online. And I was thinking like I was going to name the show like Financial Fact Checking with JT. And someone told me, they was like, they're going to say you're pocket watching. And pocket watching is a bad term in the culture. Pocket watching is someone who is not paying attention to their own business. They're minding your business and they're doing something bad. And I said to myself, well, if they're going to say that I'm pocket watching, I'm going to beat them to the punch. I'm going to name the show Pocket Watching with JT. So anyone who says, "Oh, he's pocket watching," like, yeah, jackass, he named the show Pocket Watching with JT.
Yeah, yeah.
I took that insult away from him. So that's why it's.
Yeah, you're going to lean into it.
Right. Believe it or not, I mean, a lot of people were interested in the show just because of that name. I mean, I've had some people who are in Hollywood who like reached out to me and said, "Man, that was an interesting name." And they started watching the show just based on that Pocket Watching with JT. So yeah, I leaned into it because I said, no one is trying to label themselves a pocket watcher. So I get to own this term on the internet.
Yeah, I was going to say the first person I think I ever heard do that was Rush Limbaugh with Ditto Heads. You remember Rush Limbaugh?
Yeah.
And they were insulting.
Yes, I absolutely remember Rush Limbaugh.
Right. So they were these people, for anybody who doesn't know, Rush Limbaugh was like a conservative talk show host. Mm-hmm. And all liberals were saying, "Oh, well, all of his followers, they're Ditto Heads. They just say they just regurgitate anything he says." And so they were trying to make it an insult. And so he started referring to all of his all those Ditto Heads out there. "Here's what we're talking about today." So he made it a thing. And before you know it, guys who would have T-shirts that would say Ditto Head on it. It's like, I'm taking your insult away.
Right. But
exactly. I'm going to take your insult and make it my own.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I like that. Okay, well, cool. Listen, let me, I'm going to do send me the link to the description. Send me your link to your TV show. Man, I'm so tired, bro. You see, I go to bed at like 8:30. Like, I'm an old man. We already had this conversation before the show, but I'm an old man. Like, I'm 54 years old. I'm exhausted. I can't sleep through the night anymore.
Oh,
if I just lay my head down, boom, I go to sleep. Remember when you were younger and you like lay and tossed and you could never really go. It'd take me 30 minutes to go to sleep, an hour to go to sleep. Now, as soon as I lay down, close my eyes, boom, I'm like an old man. But I can't sleep through the night. So I have to wake up for an hour and a half, walk around, come downstairs, go back upstairs, you know, go to the bathroom, lay back down, try and go to sleep. It's just fucking horrible. Hey, you guys, I appreciate you watching the video. Do me a favor. If you liked it, hit the subscribe button, hit the bell so you get notified of videos just like this. And also, we are going to leave, we're going to leave the link to Pocket Watching in the description box. And we're going to leave any social media links also. Please check out the channel. He's got a bunch of super cool videos, and the channel's growing, and I really appreciate you guys watching. And leave me a comment, and please consider joining my Patreon. Thank you very much. See you.